Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm your host for the show.
And I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. President Trump wants to put a big tariff on solar panels and other solar hardware imported from other countries. But this could have a really major effect on jobs in the solar industry in the U.S. It won't work in our favor, at least according to many people in the industry. We'll dig into that. Plus, Tom Appel of Consumer Guide Automotive has been at the North American International Auto Show, also known as the Detroit Auto Show, so he'll tell us what green cars were on display there, plus a test drive of a Cadillac hybrid that you and Tom have been driving around.
All coming up on this week's edition of Green Sense. President Trump recently announced a 30% tariff on imported solar cells and panels. What does that mean for the industry in the U.S. and elsewhere? We're joined once again by Dan Witten with the Solar Energy Industries Association, the National Trade Association of the U.S. solar industry. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Well, we want to get into why your organization disapproves of the decision that President Trump made in a second. But before we do, let's put the U.S. solar industry into context. And I've got a few simple questions. What are the total annual revenues for the solar industry?
Sure. We account for about $23 billion in investment in the United States.
And what rate is the industry growing at?
We've been growing at about 68% per year over the last 10 years. So huge growth.
And what are the key drivers that are causing this growth?
The number one driver has been a reduction in cost, certainly technological innovation and some regulatory elements also play a role.
So when I hear these fantastic numbers, it leads me to just question, why would a president who's pro-jobs want to mess with the industry that's so large and growing so rapidly? And President Trump recently announced a 30% tariff on imported solar cells and panels. Can you tell us why it was proposed and what were the president's justifications?
Well, it's really hard for me to answer the why. You know, it's one of those rare policies that help absolutely no one. So we don't know why he did it. The justification would be that he would hope to bring manufacturing back to the United States and add jobs. But in fact, we are going to lose 23,000 jobs as a result of this decision. And the ability for manufacturing to take hold using these particular tariffs is very much in doubt.
Dan, was there any consultation with your organization when this was announced?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we held dozens of meetings with the administration, different people in the administration and different agencies that play a role. So we had substantial conversations about it, but ultimately the decision was in the hands of one man, and he, I think, made a bad decision in this case.
So much of what the president talks about is just talk. It never goes into action. Has this tariff gone into action?
It's supposed to begin on February 7th.
Wow. So soon after the tariff made the news, your organization announced its disappointment over it. And tell us, what kind of an impact did that have?
Well, I think, you know, the impacts are going to come very quickly. And already a company, SunPower, has announced that they are not going to make millions of dollars of investments as a result of this case. Others will, I'm sure, come forward. There will be projects that had been planned that won't go forward. hiring plans that were on the books that are now going to be put on hold. So it's going to be pretty obvious pretty quickly that this is a bad thing for American jobs.
So the solar industry now employs more than 260,000 Americans. Can you tell us what areas do these Americans work in?
So a lot of them are installers. They install projects, whether it's rooftop or utility scale projects. They work in construction, certainly electricians. There's salespeople and marketing. Engineers, a whole slew of different kinds of workers that keep this industry vibrant. Manufacturers is another one. People talk about manufacturers and they think just about cells and panels. We've got 36,000 people who are building things like inverters and tracking devices and racking systems so that the panels can be housed in frames, basically. So lots of manufacturing as well, all kinds of jobs in this industry.
How much or how many jobs or what percentage are of the workers actually work in producing solar panels here in the U.S.? Do you know that or have a best guess?
It's less than one.
1%?
It's about 0.5%. Yeah.
So this makes no rational sense. It just baffles myself. I'm not an industry expert, but when I read this, I just couldn't believe who would benefit here other than possibly the utility companies.
It baffles the mind. It doesn't help utility companies. In fact, many utility companies were in with the administration lobbying along with us or in separate meetings fighting this tariff. The utilities don't want it because they've made a commitment to going solar in many cases. They plan to buy hundreds of thousands, if not millions of panels themselves. So in general, the utilities thought that the tariffs were a bad idea.
Without the tariff, what would you expect the solar industry, what rate would you expect it to grow at?
Well, that's a complicated question. In 2016, we doubled our previous record. We blew away, all previous marks for deployment. And part of the reason for that was that planners for solar projects thought that the investment tax credit was going to expire at the end of 2016. So they planned these projects. They went forward to the projects. We got an extension to the ITC. But there was a slight drop off expected in 2017. We haven't gotten the final numbers for that, but we expect it to be a drop off in 2017. So the deployment was dropping slightly from 2016 to 2017 and then flattening at 2018, according to GTM.
And now with the tariff, you're seeing a drastic decline in 2018?
Well, Robert, we're seeing some different estimates about what's going to happen in 2018 versus 2019. We think that there's going to be a drop of about 15 to 20% off of what had been projected for 2018. But again, GTM Research does quarterly reports on deployment. And we'll track those numbers very closely to find out what the actual impact of that will be. But over the next 4 years, we think it'll be about 7 to 8 gigawatts that was going to get built that isn't going to get built.
Well, we always like to end on a positive high note. And something your association has been promoting in the last several months is solar energy storage. Tell us a little bit about that and what kind of an impact that'll have on the market.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, we didn't like the tariff decision. We think it will stand in the way of what otherwise could be a very strong American industry. You know, the tariffs do decline by 5% every year, and we're going to continue to push forward. There's going to be great opportunities in this industry, and certainly storage is one of those areas where we think that solar will be a part of the sort of ongoing operation of the grid night and day, where you can store some of that energy that you're producing during the day, use it in the evening, and really, in a sense, have solar as a baseload form of electricity in a very small amount of time. It can work with utility scale projects. It can be used in community solar, and it can be used in rooftop as well. So we're really looking forward to advocating for policies that support that storage as a backbone for the solar energy that we're producing during the day. And again, it's just one of many areas where we're very optimistic for the future. I mean, again, the tariffs were let down, but it's not going to deter us from moving forward.
So I should, to be objective and fair, ask the question, will this tariff produce any American jobs as it relates to solar panel manufacturing?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. The way that solar manufacturing is innovated, unfortunately, mostly in other countries, that's just the way it worked out. But they figured out how to manufacture panels and cells in a almost fully automated process. So actual manufacturing jobs, you're talking about hundreds, you know, and so maybe they add a couple hundred, maybe in combination they could add, you know, 1,000 or 1,500. And so we're looking at 23,000 job losses. And so it really is taking us in the wrong direction in how the jobs will be affected. You just don't get a lot from manufacturing.
Well, Dan, thank you for joining us on Green Sense, and we hope that we see cooler heads prevail and future policies as it relates to renewable energy production.
We hope so too, Robert, and thank you so much for having me.
That's Dan Whitten with the Solar Energy Industries Association joining us on Green Sense. This is Robert Colangelo inviting you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you. Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow. Thank you.
He's back from the Detroit Auto Show with some green automotive news all the way from Motown. We're joined by Consumer Guide automotive publisher Tom Appel. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
What is the importance of the Detroit Auto Show, even though most cars aren't made in Detroit anymore?
Yeah, Detroit still serves as sort of a central point for everything that happens automotive in the United States. You still have Ford and General Motors that are headquartered there. A number of Ford manufacturers either have their U.S. headquarters there, some manufacturing or a supplier base there. So if you're looking for a place where most of the activity still happens, it is Detroit.
Is it a international location also, or is it just the hub for the U.S.?
It is both. General Motors does all of its global operations are headquartered in the U.S., same for Ford. Fiat Chrysler Organization, though not headquartered in the U.S. anymore, still has massive operations in the area. So it's international.
Well, let's get to it, Tom. What's your overall summary of the Detroit Auto Show when it comes to green cars?
It was a very big show in terms of news, and the biggest news this year came from an unlikely source, and that was big pickup trucks. Both Chevrolet and Ram made big news with things that they did to make their trucks look better, drive quicker, and save a lot of gas.
What types of miles per gallon are we talking about in a pickup truck?
That's a good question, and we don't have answers on actual EPA numbers yet, but one of the great impacts of this is that large pickup trucks make up 2 million units a year of total auto sales. Chevy and Ram combine for half of those sales, so any impact they have overall is going to have a major impact on what happens on the U.S., U.S. fleet consumption. And they both made really big strides to lower fuel economy, increase power, and in the case of Ram, they now have added a hybrid model.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Ram is doing something they call eTorque. It's small e, big T. That's their brand for this. And it's a 48-volt base system. And it's a fairly simple system. It shouldn't cost as much as a full hybrid. And it's going to be applied to both their V6 engine and their 5.7-liter Hemi engine, where it'll be optional. It'll be standard with the V6. Typically, those cars are good for a fuel economy boost of 15 to 20%. And as an individual vehicle, that's probably not a huge amount. But when you scale that across a million units, or in the case of Ram, 500,000 units that they're going to sell next year, that'll have a big impact on overall fuel consumption.
The big pickup trucks are getting what, Tom? Somewhere between 15 to 20 miles a gallon?
Yeah, that's about right. And with careful driving, a good, depending on the vehicle, someone can see as much as 18 in routine driving.
And what would a green truck get?
That's a good question. Back when GM was selling its two-mode hybrids back in the last decade, they were getting 22 to 24 miles per gallon. And I think that we can see fuel economy in these new, in the Ram case, the eTorque. I think that driving along, average consumption that an owner might see should be a little bit over 20 miles per gallon, which is a big increase over the old ones.
Pickup trucks have gotten much bigger over the years. We discussed that in previous shows. Is there now starting to be a market for that smaller pickup truck, which is actually quite large these days?
That's a great question. That market expanded a couple of years ago when General Motors redesigned the Colorado and the Canyon. And this year, the Ford Ranger is going to be back on the market. I think that market has capped out for now, but it did expand. And I think there are a lot of people who decided they just don't need a larger truck. And as you mentioned, big trucks are very big. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that they lowered the weight, both Chevrolet and Ram chose to increase the overall length of their big pickups again. So they've gone from really big to just flat out gigantic.
Well, I think that mid-grade truck is really going to be the way we're going to see good fuel improvement. Well, let's move on from trucks. As you know, one of the great things about the auto show are concept cars. Did any debut that were pretty cool and green?
Yeah, and it's funny. When Honda calls something in a concept, it means they're going to build it. Honda almost never does radical concepts. And a case in point is Honda launched the Honda Insight, or introduced the Honda Insight prototype at the Detroit Auto Show. Now, there had been an Insight before, and it had been a very small vehicle that didn't quite compete with the Prius, and there wasn't a lot of interest in it. They've stuck with the Insight name for their next vehicle, but it's about the size of a Honda Accord, but it is a separate dedicated hybrid vehicle, which is something a lot of manufacturers are getting away from. But it will use hybrids, Honda's more advanced hybrid system, should be good for 50 to 55 miles per gallon overall, though they haven't talked numbers yet.
Are there any new players on the block showing off their greenness for their first time? Or is it pretty much the traditional players out there or manufacturers?
Pretty much. There's a Chinese manufacturer called Byton that I believe had their vehicle on display at the Detroit Auto Show. This is just one more manufacturer that wants to get into the EV market. We're learning from Tesla and other players that it's not that easy to do, but they seem to have a market already in China, so they're an established maker. And they showed a mid-sized crossover, and that's something that we could see in a couple of years in the U.S. They are, in fact, signing dealers, so this could be interesting.
What about Tesla? They do everything so different than a traditional auto manufacturer. Were they even at the show?
No, they weren't, and that's fairly typical for Tesla. Teslas do not show up at the major auto shows. The big news there, of course, is that the Model 3 production is still being ratcheted up. So at this point, if you have a deposit down on a car, you're probably still waiting in great anticipation for your car.
And what about an autonomous car update? Anything new at the show that we should be aware of?
A lot of stuff at the show, but mostly just a lot of talk. If we're waiting for those, this is great stuff to talk about for 2019. The Cadillac CT6 for 2018 has what Cadillac calls Super Cruise, and that's advanced level 2 hybrid, autonomous, which means that you can, in fact, let the car drive itself, but in level 2, they want you to keep your hands on the wheel. So it'll steer and it'll brake and it'll keep up with traffic on its own, but you're not allowed to not pay attention. Later in the year, however, Audi will be bringing out a new version of the Audi A8, and that'll be a level 3 autonomous vehicle, and you will be able for short periods of time to remove your hands from the wheel. You will be expected to be ready to take over at any time, though. That's how level 3 works.
One of the reasons that we spend so much time on cars and transportation is that it's our belief that this is going to be the transformative and disruptive change to society that you saw in the iPhone happening through transportation and cars. What's the coolest thing you saw at the show, green or otherwise, and you know, how will that disruptor transform society?
What I'm seeing, and I think it's very interesting, and this, I'm not the only person seeing this, it's been written out a lot, is the death of the traditional sedan and this migration to very small crossovers. And manufacturers keep introducing smaller and smaller crossovers, and there seems to be a market for this. Hyundai's got the Kona coming out later this year. Ford just started selling the EcoSport product. And then BMW at the Detroit Auto Show launched the X2, which is a very expensive small crossover designed to look a little bit more like a coupe. And manufacturers see this happening. People, both mainstream buyers and luxury buyers, are looking for these smaller crossovers, and they tend to be much more efficient. It's an interesting migration, and it's minimalism without the minimalism, because they actually cost more than the cars that people are replacing.
Well, and it's also consistent with maybe what's happening globally. Cars are getting much smaller out there. So it'll be an interesting thing to keep our eye on. Any last thoughts, Tom?
We've got the Chicago Auto Show right upon us, so there'll be more news there. Also, we talked about the Chevrolet Silverado. Everything we talked about that will likely be the same for the GMC Sierra, which we'll be seeing introduced later on.
Well, I got to give you a big hug, man. This Caddy, they put the Cadillac back in Caddy here. This thing is a impressive, luxurious performance car with great style. I just found it remarkable, Tom. How'd you give it back?
Yeah, the Cadillac CT6 is the brand's luxury, their flagship sedan. It is the biggest, it's not the biggest sedan in their lineup. There are bigger ones, but it is by far the most expensive and probably the most refined and most interesting. We had a chance, you and I both had a chance to drive the plug-in hybrid version of the vehicle, and it's a great story.
Yes. So I really like this car as far as style goes, the outside lights, that trim the car. I like the door handles that pop out with the lights at night, make it really look nice. The remote starter, especially in this winter weather, is fantastic. But the one thing, you really have to read the manual. There are way too many buttons to press on this car to figure out intuitively, and you do not want to do it while you're driving. You definitely need to read the manual, understand how to operate that car, because there are like unlimited features.
Yeah, there really are. Cadillac makes use of something called Q, which is Cadillac User Experience, and that's their infotainment interface system. And you will want to spend time with your dealer, and dealers are set up to spend time with you learning how to use that, because it does take some acclimation. Some stuff that might seem intuitive or will seem intuitive eventually won't initially, because you have to find it on the system. And it works a little bit like you might expect a desktop Mac to work, because there are icons and features and apps and things like that. But you want to set them up so you're most convenient with them. And yeah, that can take some time.
So is it worth the extra bucks to get a Caddy hybrid instead of a Chevy or a Toyota or a Honda?
Well, this is a pretty sophisticated plug-in hybrid system. It makes use of a 2-liter turbocharged engine, and it combines for 335 horsepower. That number doesn't sound that exotically awesome, but it's pretty good. But it's the torque that is generated by the electric motor that gives this car its real oomph. Cadillac claims it reaches 60 miles an hour from a stop in about 5 seconds, and it feels like that to me. This is really a quick car. I had some issues with the interplay between the gas engine and the electric motor at certain speeds, where I thought responsiveness to throttle inputs was just a little bit strange. But for the most part, it was seamless. I like this drivetrain a lot.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, joining us on GreenSense. You could read his reviews at consumerguide.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of GreenSense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.